A pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I worked, as it was just said, on Ashura and Muharram in Lebanon, and I worked specifically on Majalis al-Aza from the perspective of social anthropology. To the best of my knowledge, 12 Majalis al-Aza were not studied before in the Arab world. They're called Qaraya in Iraq, Ruzikhan in Iran, and a number of things could be quite fascinating and challenging. As an anthropologist, the framework I was exposed to was that of rituals. Victor Turner was mentioned before. But anthropology suffers, I think, contrary to what some of my professors would agree, especially in Oxford, suffers from simply an unwillingness to understand much of what anthropology to ritual, to my mind, is about in the modern day, for most of them. So much of the literature on ritual still cannot escape Durkheim 100 years ago, whereby ritual somehow keeps on evolving and on reproducing the status quo. But as a student of Shiaism, as a student of any complex literate tradition, not only Shiaism, you see that the method is much more complex than that. Victor Turner provides us with quite a rich framework whereby we speak about a so-called how much time do I have?
20 minutes.
Where we can speak about a so-called communitas, which is the effect of the moment of the founder, whereby something as grave as the crucifixion of Jesus, the effect it has on people. But he also tells us in relation to that about a so-called the historical process that happens. So he talks to about three kinds of communitas, which is one thing the students who worked on Ashura, like students of Ashura, like Chalkowski and others, did not really look at. So first you have the existential communitas, the moment, the happening of it, and then you have the normative communitas, where it has to be institutionalized, and then you have the ideological one, where people decide, that's it, we have to go back and recreate the conditions of that moment, that foundational moment. Fair enough. But I think in his work, which was published, his most interesting work was published posthumously, and it is about Christian cults of saints, specifically in Mexico and elsewhere. And will it be said that Turner converted to Catholicism towards the end of his life? There he talks about a number of Christian Catholic notions, most of all communion of saints, and about these narratives. And he shows us how that some of the narratives, for example, the various citations of the Virgin, have traces in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The pastorals, that some people would go, they are shepherds, they would see the lady, miracles would happen, etc., 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 and this becomes a symbol. Fair enough. But in much of his work, also on St. Francis, he does not go back to history. How does this reflect to us on Shiaism? Now, working on Lebanon, it was quite fascinating that as a Sunni student of Shiaism, I basically could see three major forces in the field. There is Hezbollah, there's the late Sayyid Fadlallah in his office, and there is Amal. And each of these people would insist that their Shiaism is what I should study. And then the others is just, they wouldn't say it like that, but it's not really the right way to go. You want to come to us. We will tell you what it is. But behind that political scene as well, there was a very interesting debate going on. Now, the allies of Amr, rather than the followers of Amr, would mostly quote the late Muhammad Mahdi Shamsuddin, who worked extensively on the history of the subject, and whose quote-unquote theory on it that the imam could have not come out to seek leadership. He did not seek it. He wanted to give people what he called sabma istishhadiyya, a shock that would become a symbol for people to follow in all ages. This was his argument, which the people in Amal would follow, who behind closed doors are much more critical of Hezbollah than they are outside, let that be said. I hope none of them is here. For Hezbollah, it's much more straightforward. You know, this is the time of revolution, this is the time of war. We're at war with Israel, we know who Yazid is, we know who Hussein is. Simple, you know? And they were not that keen on critical approaches to the subject. There's a conference that Hezbollah held either in 99 or 2001, which said Hassan Nasrallah himself, he says, you know what we have is a body of literature, generally speaking, fine. Let's not discuss it much. With Fadlallah, he ended up, even though ultimately, formerly a foe of Shamsuddin, he ended up inheriting a reformist Arab one, and here I do not want to slip into any cultural essentializations where anthropologists, the word culture makes us shudder, you know, of what is Arab and what is non-Arab, a reformist trend that began with, say, Muhsin al-Amin, that goes through various schools in Najaf, you know, Jama'at al-Ulama, Muntada al-Nashr, Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, etc., etc., and he gives relatively a more critical and nuanced understanding of what Hussein is about, de-emphasizing tears for the message. But also for the late Sayyid Fadlallah, Imam Hussein was not only a rebel, he sought to rule. He went out seeking power, which falls in line with what Najaf Abadi was saying in Iran in the 60s and 70s. So you have three schools. The ritual is not, quote-unquote, the same in line of this. It's performed differently, actually. There are different emphasis on tears and different links to history. But we go even further back. And mind you, Lebanon is a country with 90-odd% literacy. Everybody reads, everybody, quote-unquote, thinks, everybody questions, you know? And so you'll be listening to the sermon, and the sermon reader, for example, Sayyid Sheikh Faisal Kavimi or Ali Sleem, if those who are you familiar, Faisal Kavimi has become a star, they would say, وَكَمَا قَالُوا قَالَ أَرْبَابُ الْمَقَاتِلِ. And as the authors of Maqatil, the authors about the literature of Hussein had said, وَكَمَا قَالَ الدِّنُورِ وَكَمَا قَالَ الطَّبَرِ. The sources are quoted, they are brought in. The authority of the book is present. Now this is infinitely more complex than most of the anthropological literature on ritual, whatever it is. Not that there's no framework in the work of somebody like Turner for it, but it is there. But even then, the debate goes deeper. Because what people like Shamsuddin had done, building on what said Mursal Amin, is that they went back and questioned the original narratives. The, starting with Sayyid Mursal Amin on the Arab side, a similar process had happened on the Persian side with Nuri Tabarsi, as far as I know, you correct me if I'm wrong. They said, you know what, we've been forcing people to shed tears for Hussein by telling lies, which is also what Mutahhari did later, Murtada Mutahhari. So we have to question that. But there's a continuous problem and tension here. On the one hand, there's the need to create drama to make people weep, and on the other hand, there's the need to verify accounts, to verify narratives. So that is a continuous dilemma. But also, there's the continuous excavation of the roots that is going on, and one would wonder what would remain. And here, where I would like to pose other questions or contributions, somebody like Muhammad Mahdi Shamsuddin invested time and effort trying to figure out who actually was in Karbala and who wasn't. We do know that we have four major original sources. We have Abu Mikhnaf, which comes to us through Tabari. We have Maqatil al-Talibiyin, which comes from Asfahani, which also quotes Abu Mikhnaf. We have the book of Sheikh al-Mufid al-Irshad. We have later al-Khwarizmi. These are the four, but not the only sources. But even in these sources, things are not necessarily always as reliable as they seem to be. In Tabari, we have two accounts, one, two paragraphs, and the other one goes on for pages forever. You know, and we do know that there were performative traditions that came into the practice early on. As I said earlier in the discussion, that the killing of Imam Hussein was not a normal incident. It was not a normal moment, really, you know, for the Muslim society of all what became Sunnis and Shiites. So one moment, for example, that was definitive is when the revolution of the repentance of Al-Tawabun began. When they go to the grave of Hussein, and the very famous, extremely dramatic scene is recorded by Abu Mikhnaf that comes through Tabari, and the revolution of the repentance begin. So was the legend of Hussein born at the moment of his killing or the moment the ritual began of commemorating him? I would say actually that history was written by the ritual, not by the very moment. There's a tradition attributed to the Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq. I think it's in Al-Kulayni, in Al-Kafi. And he asked someone, what is happening around the grave of Hussein? Imam Ja'far died 148 AH, as we know. And somebody tells him, well, if you go, you'd find a narrator narrating and a poet reciting and somebody weeping. By the middle of the second century, there was already an entire performative tradition around the grave of the Imam. And let it be said that before Islam, we had already performative traditions that were present. You had in the Arab cities the Qussas, who, you know, we know were very present and everywhere. You had Naddabat, women whose job was to make people weep for the dead. You had the very ancient Arab tradition of elegiac poetry. So all of these were there, and they definitely merged. And who's more important than Hussein for this to merge into? Hence, I think it's quite important and useful to bring in the category of hagiography for the Christian tradition. Now, that is basically the cult of saints, whereby it's not about real history, but nor is it also a lie. It's somewhere between exaggeration and love. I mean, it's just forgotten that somebody in the 19th century, I think in Protestant Switzerland, once wrote that the writing of the Gospels was the unconscious myth-building power of the early Christian community. You know, and here it becomes quite difficult to distinguish between history and reality. And it's not only, by the way, a Shi'i thing, but, you know, I come from Cairo. There's a number of shrines attributed to Ahlul Bayt of which there's no historical proof at all. You know, I mean, you know, we have Sayyidah Zainab, there's another one in Damascus. We have Fatima, the daughter of Hussein. There's not any proof of her being there. But people do not approach these things necessarily, as somebody well said before, always on logic. But in this particular case, we have a huge body of traditions asking people to weep, asking people to commemorate, so that will shape the story and shape the narrative. To go back to some of the things I mentioned here, you know, about the politics and about the narrative and about the history. Now, first and foremost, if you talk about history as a power there, you talk about multiple histories, and thus the story is mediated. And actually, some of Turner's works discusses this, how symbols, say Imam Hussein, can have different meanings in different contexts. So in Lebanon, actually, especially for Hezbollah, Ashura and Imam Hussein is remembered through the years of war with Israel. If Turner talks about so-called an initial root paradigm, actually here the primary closer root paradigm is the experience of thinking of Imam Hussein through the years of wars with Israel, and it becomes quite difficult to separate it. History is thrown through another history, and there's a third layer of history, the intellectual history, the debate, the discussion. In terms of the practice as well, and in terms of the theory, what we're looking at actually is process of exegesis and interpretation. Suddenly I think somebody like Paul Ricoeur, who does hermeneutics, become much more relevant in a certain way. Because what Ricoeur tells us is that hermeneutics is not only about reading a text, you're reconstituting yourself through a text. If the text is relevant to you, if it's important to you, you're arguing with it. And you're conjoining discourses, not only one setting you're reading it through. Interpretation, we often forget, is done in a social context, in a certain socio-historical moment. So what's happening here is that there is a mediated relationship with the text. The so-called emotional has a very powerful, quote-unquote, intellectual basis. There's the whole theory of the Imamate. And again, it's fascinating that how all the literature I'm aware of, on Ashura and Muharram does not mention the concept of ziyara, which is the essence of the entire thing. The whole point is that you're doing ziyara, whether from home or from elsewhere. You know, that is not mentioned. It doesn't tackle the idea of the Imamate, which is the very core of the 12 of faith. 12 of Shiism doesn't make any sense without the Imamate. This is the core of it. This is the difference with Sunniism and actually even with Zaydi Shiism or, you know, even Ismailism in a way. So you present these and then suddenly things begin to fall in place, you know. And also on top of that, of course, the entire tradition of who weeps for the Imam. The tears would make sense. But then there is the added bit of the experience. Yes, I come from Cairo, where it's believed the head of Hussein is buried. The day the Imam Hussein is buried, the city comes to paralysis, the mulud. The city's paralyzed. But as it so happens, nobody ever told us why the head is the head in one place and the body is another. You know, strangely enough, even though there were books about this, written by Sunni Egyptian authors, most famous Abbas al-Aqad and Shirqawi. But I did not grow up with the experience of this emotional bond with the Imams. So having attended Ashura in Lebanon for 5 years, the first 2 years I attended, heard the story, was deeply moved, wept like everyone else around me. The third year, that didn't happen to me. You know? Now, I did not grow up with it as these people did. There is something in the experience of the individuals that an anthropologist, no matter how much empathy he or she will put, will not get. And it's important to recognize this and admit to it, you know? Even though I relate to Imam Hussein emotionally as well, but not like these people. You know, that doesn't make it essentially, you know, it doesn't make it essentially different. It's a different life experience, even if it's intellectually close. So basically, I think, I mean, if I were to conclude it, there could be a conclusion. All of what this is about is that if you are to study an intellectual tradition like this, you'd have to emphasize the text. And what the text points out as well is the narrative. Much of this is about the narrative. The narrative creates empathy. The whole point, Turner tells us this, and he's not alone in this, the whole point of pilgrimage, and ziyara is a kind of pilgrimage, is that you're repeating the life deeds of the founder. We forget that Hajj in Islam, if you go to Umrah, actually, you're doing the same things that happened centuries before. Supposedly what we believe Sayyidina Ibrahim did, or the Prophet ﷺ did, or whoever did. Ziyara is the same thing. It's about creating the mental image of the tragedy and living it. Narrative is empathy, and through narrative you see reality. Narrative in this case becomes a language, it becomes an idiom. You know, I mean, in Lebanon, the language of Ashura, the Yazid versus Muawiyah versus the others, versus Imam Ali versus Imam Hussein, becomes a language which political reality is thrown out and described, you know? So, narrative is the key, text is the, you know, is the password, if you wish. And without that, none of this will make any sense. Just as simple as that. So, I'll wait for questions if you have questions. Thank you.